Welcome to BizRocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for BizRocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to BizRocket Radio. This is John Baker here signing in once again on a glorious day here in Atlanta. School has started and the fall is close. So we are excited to have a couple guests here this morning on BizRocket. This is a show that gives us the opportunity to chat with executives and business owners in the Atlanta area and learn from some of their experiences, challenges, also some of their successes. And today we have Barry and Diane Ogle. And Barry and Diane are with Business Momentum Group. And definitely excited to talk to both you guys. So welcome in.
Thanks for having us.
So I'm going to start off with Diane because Diane is much more interesting than Barry is.
I don't know about that.
That's true.
Diane, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got to where you are now?
Well, it's been a fun journey, that's for sure. I started Business Momentum Group in 1996 after having quite a career in different industries in the corporate America, everything from Fortune 500 industrial paper company to temporary help company I helped start in Orlando and eventually took over Tampa and did a little troubleshooting up here in Atlanta in the days. So, but when I was getting ready to start having my boys and we were in transition, I left my corporate job so I could start my own business. Didn't have any vision what that would entail.
Right.
So, interviewed lots of people that had businesses. My company I had left said she would be my first client, which was just a blessing. So that's where I got my feet birthed into the world of business entrepreneurship and just kind of grew it from there. And over the years, transitioned to really working with leaders of small to mid-sized companies. My sweet spot has always been marketing and growth. So I always look at the engine of the organizations and come alongside those leaders. So
good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Good
fun.
Stuff. All right.
Fun,
so
fun.
Barry.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
Yes. I started my career with Marriott. And so it's mostly been in the hospitality industry, and I've had stops with Disney, and latest corporate role was with Wyndham Worldwide. I've also spent a little time in the credit card industry on both the card issuing side and the merchant services processing. And at one point in my career, I worked as a licensed professional counselor, which today helps me when I'm working with leaders. It gives me some keen insight that I can bring some things into the picture that oftentimes I think is overlooked.
So tell me what it is about a business. I'm going to just call it BMG because it's a little
That's
easier.
What we call it. That's good.
Tell us a little bit more about what makes BMG unique in the field that you're in, because clearly there's lots of coaching and you know assistance programs for executives. Tell us what makes it unique working with BMG.
Well, I believe that what makes us unique is some of our skills and how we've combined them together and then what we customize for each client. We go in and do an assessment. And really, a lot of times when people want to talk to us, they're in some kind of pain. Mm. So it's our job to peel back the layers and see what that pain is. And then, and we're very honest and integritous. If it's an area that we believe and we feel confident we can help them with, then we're going to put a proposal together to come alongside that leader and infuse the level of expertise they need. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what makes us. We aren't cookie cutter and say, okay, here's our product or here's our widget. You know, this is you just need it. We're not selling from that direction.
Right. So you're working with individuals and kind of customizing an approach that you're taking with each one of those people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Great. Yeah,
that's right. And if I could add, Diane's right. I mean, John, you make a good point. There are many different consulting groups out there that are all, many are very effective in what they do. So one of the things we try not to do is be all things to all people, so to speak. We do want to come in with a customized approach. We don't have widgets or books that we've written that we're trying to get out and say, this will solve all your problems. But we've got the resources and the know-how to come in and really listen and assess the situation and then design and implement a solution that's exactly what you need.
I mean, both of you guys went through this transition of living kind of the corporate world,
mm-hmm.
right? And then
yes.
and then into this your own thing. Mm-hmm. How was that transition? What was the most difficult part about making that transition?
Well, we came in, of course, at different times. So
right.
he came in
right.
2010 to join me, that I had been doing this for quite a while. For me, the transition when I first got into it was not really knowing what I was doing and trying to really assess, okay, now I'm a new mom, we needed this business to be thriving to support our family. And so the biggest transition was taking a look and feeling confident in my skills and what could I offer to another organization. And what was really fun is seeing how many different types of organizations that I could come alongside and help and really make a difference, mm-hmm. both for that leader and their organization and team.
Was there anything that surprised you about the transition, either hard or easy?
You have to be very self-motivated. And I've coached a lot of people that want to get into their own business,
right.
and I tell them it is not for everybody.
Yeah.
And I don't coach them, this is the way
it's
to go.
It's the mecca. Everybody can do it.
I say it's not for the faint of
right.
heart, and you better have some tough skin.
Yeah.
You know, and you better have that self, like, fire to drive you to keep going, because it's tough. It
yeah.
can be really tough.
Now, Barry, you're straight off the boat on the transition, right?
Yes, so. just a little over 2 years now, and right. you're right. I think I miss the high people interaction on a daily basis
right.
and managing multiple projects all the time. The biggest shift for me is being more entrepreneurial, because you have to hunt what you eat, so to speak. And that was a big shift. When you're in a corporate role, I mean, you've got all these projects and initiatives. And
just coming, they're just coming to
that's
you.
That's right.
Yeah.
It more than you can usually handle, but I like the challenges. So it's going from that to really trying to start and move it forward. It's been a big shift. At the same time, you're more in control of your destiny, and you're not playing so much with the corporate politics that exist in large corporations. And so that part I don't miss.
Yeah, yeah, that's nice. When you guys, you talked a little bit, Barry, about specialization and kind of working with not everybody to everybody.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about who you tend to work well with. Is it individuals? Is it teams? Is it larger, smaller? Who's a good niche group for you?
Right. That's a great question, John. We actually work with both. We both do coaching, and so that's with individuals. I prefer working with teams, but I think I'm very effective working with coaches as well. We prefer working with medium-sized businesses. Large corporations tend to have their teams already in place.
Right.
If you're a smaller startup, it's harder for me to work with them. Diane has some skills that can come in, and it was she can speak to. But usually the medium-sized organization that's really on a growth mode, that they're growing faster than they can keep up, and they need somebody to help them develop their leaders, put in succession planning, those types of things, onboarding programs, employee engagement, all of those type things is what I'm pretty good about.
So in this kind of business environment since 2008, certainly, really, if you almost go back to 2000, it's been kind of the slow growth scenario. And how has that impacted you guys, and what are you doing to change it, if it's been an issue, or has it been unusually good?
Well, one thing that we did is, because of the slow growth and the pains that a lot of our clients and even prospects have faced in that season, we started a subset group of what we offer, and it's called Ministry Momentum Group, because we found that a lot of nonprofits and ministries needed our expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing that was birthed in this time, is to be able to come alongside of them. They don't usually have the level of expertise on their teams nor the funding, but yet they still need a lot of the funding to keep their existence in place. So that's one thing that we did during that season.
Kind of a spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple layered business mm-hmm, organization, mm-hmm. right?
Better to address them and so that they feel like, oh, you're not a bunch of, you know, business people, but we have ministry hearts. And so we can really come alongside them, infuse our business expertise, and get them to where they want to go for the next level of their nonprofit status.
What are some of the issues that you tend to see on a regular basis? I mean, you guys are on the front lines of this stuff. You see it every day and in different organizations. What are some of the things that are just happening on a regular basis that aren't right?
I would say putting the wrong people in the wrong positions is fairly typical. And it's hard as a consultant to come in and say, oh, you need to move this person out and put this person in or something. You're not going to do that, right? So I deal with a lot of development, but I try to coach and help them understand the concept that Marshall Goldsmith put out on everybody's radar a few years ago when he wrote the book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And I think a problem that a lot of organizations or a mistake they make is that they see an individual and they see how successful they've been in this role, and so they want to reward them by promoting them up into the next role.
Yeah.
And the competencies that made them successful in their current role probably won't. Sometimes they do, but likely will not make them successful in that role because everything's changed.
Right.
And the higher you go, it doesn't matter what profession you're in. The higher you go in the pyramid as you climb the corporate ladder, you're dealing more and more with influencing people because you're not the one on the front line getting the job done.
Right.
So your ability to be able to engage, involve, and influence people becomes the critical skill sets.
And a lot of times that doesn't necessarily correlate well into those lower positions either.
That's right, because right. that's not what's going to make them successful there.
Right. So if they're successful under that one layer, promotion isn't necessarily the best thing to do. So what do you do?
Right.
I mean, you want to hold that person, you want to keep them engaged. How do you do that when you have that person knocking the cover off the ball going, I want to go to the next level, and you're saying, no, you don't. And right. How do you keep them and keep them motivated?
Well, that's a challenge, of course, for any organization, but you're talking about a cultural shift for an entire organization. So it really needs to be something that's starting more at the senior level. And if you've been doing it the wrong way for so many years, there needs to be a public admission about it and a statement that comes out and says, we want to do better. We've studied organizations, best practices, how do they get there? And so we're trying to correct our course. And so this is how we're going to change some things up. Because you never want to publicly comment on someone that's not performing, obviously publicly, but you can talk in generalities. And so there's a cultural shift. So it's a new paradigm that we're on course. And the easiest way to communicate is to say, this is how best-in-class organizations do it. We want to be best-in-class. There's no employee in any organization that would say they want to be anything less.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it easy to sell the concept, and then you just have to have the rigor, the knowledge, the wherewithal to come in and make it happen. Oftentimes, people have a great plan. They fail on the execution mm-hmm. of the plan because they run into so many obstacles. So it requires senior leaders to stay the course
mm-hmm.
once they decide.
And see, I even see that on the smaller business side. When you're dealing with the business owner, sometimes they stay in that vision status,
yeah.
and they don't know how to put feet to their vision.
Mm-hmm.
So they either need to bring an outside person like us alongside them, so you put feet to it,
mm-hmm.
so that they can start going into that direction of vision. But so many of them want to stay up here in the vision.
Yeah, they never actually do anything.
Right.
Right.
And that hinders their growth as an organization.
Yeah.
And that's why you see so many small businesses failing and really not going anywhere.
Well, you see that I think a lot of times even with entrepreneurs, because they've got
Absolutely.
That vision and focus, and they got these things that they want to be able to do, but what you really need to do is sit down and make 30 phone calls and you know, go visit a bunch of people, and they're like, well, that's not fun and exciting,
right. mm-hmm.
and they don't just never get off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that to be the case?
Oh, absolutely. Or they have so many different ideas. I always want to narrow their approach,
right.
you know, and let's prioritize it. What do we first want to accomplish here with the business? What's going to get us to the quickest area so that we can talk about some of these other things? And I talk about putting them in their backpack for now,
right.
and then we'll pull those out when it's the right time. So,
how do you keep them focused?
Well, just like that. I try to get them to get it out of their head
mm-hmm.
and put it on paper.
Mm.
And then once you have a tactical plan like that, then it's easier to execute on it. And then by bringing somebody like myself in, I can keep their feet to the fire. And accountability is a huge aspect. And sometimes it needs to come from the outside, not someone that they're the boss of. They need to have somebody in their life where it's really iron sharpens iron that can come in and say, hey, where are we at on this issue? Right. Where have we progressed since the last time we were talking about this? So that's where the momentum, that's why I started it so many years ago with the name Momentum, because I loved the visual of let's keep the movement going. And the more we move, the faster we're going to get going to where we need to be and where the ultimate vision is.
And John, if I could just comment on that as well. As I've worked with leadership groups and helping them determine their strategic vision for the next year or two, oftentimes at the end of that, I will go back through with the same group that we've been working all day and say, now let's discuss what are the obstacles that could get us off course that would prevent us from meeting our strategic goals. So I write those up and then we discuss them. And then what I do, once we get an exhaustive list, I take them back through and talk about what are ways that we can prevent this obstacle from occurring. And then we take some ownership. So one by one, I visually scratch through that obstacle. So at the end, we all have ownership and an agreement. We're not going to allow anything to keep us off track. I think that's a good technique and exercise to help people solidify what they've just committed to.
All right. So I'm a business owner, and I'm out listening to this show, and I'm thinking, that's all fine and good, but I just got started. I'm barely getting on my feet. I don't think I'm really ready for all this consulting stuff. I don't have really a whole bunch of employees. When is too early? Is there a too early in getting somebody on board like what you guys do?
Yes, I would say there is. I mean, they need to get their feet wet a bit. But there's some wonderful resources out there that the fresh into the fire can use with the Small Business Administration, the Small Business Development Center, their SCORE, which is retired persons, and all of those services are free until they can get themselves, you know, laid a nice foundation. If they've been gifted with the revenue and funding and it's not an issue, then I would highly recommend them bringing in an expert to kind of like personalize it, customize it, and walk with them.
So when do they know? When does a bell go off where they go, hey, you know, maybe I should be thinking about, it's almost a pride thing, right? This is my own baby. This is my own thing. I don't need a bunch of consultants coming in here who don't know me. Mm-hmm. Do you run into that a lot?
Yeah, and it just has to be that point of pain when they really right. either say, okay, I can't go any further and I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong.
Right.
Or they'll keep trying. And so, you know, until they get to that point of, you know, wanting to seek some other options just to help them along the way. What do you think, Barry?
Yeah, I think humility is a great virtue, yeah. And it really helps leaders solidify. But it's kind of hard when you're taking the brunt. You're trying to get a rocket off the ground, so to speak, and
right.
It takes a lot more energy initially. But there comes to Diane's point, you have to recognize the pain. How far are they willing to go through that before they reach out for someone else? And oftentimes they don't, and then the business fails.
Well, let me dig into that just a little bit, because obviously coming from your same world, I know my experience out there. Do you find that you don't like to work with those clients? I mean, the ones that they've hit that point of pain, right? And so they fought it, and now they say, I got to have help. And they're almost in that desperation mode. I mean, do you find those aren't really good people to work with as opposed to the people who get, hey, I'm a champion. I want to be like an athlete, you think. You know,
right.
An athlete knows they need a coach, right. You know, not because they don't have talents or skills, but to achieve their vision. And, I mean, do you find those are easier to work with and preferred to work with, quite frankly?
Yeah, Andy, that's a great question. So I'll go back to my earlier days when I worked as a licensed professional counselor. And I did set up a premarital counseling course. Those are people that are excited to see you. They're excited about life. They're excited about their future. There's a lot more fun involved in that. At the same time, the reason I became a counselor at that time was to help people with real problems. So I don't shy away. In fact, I welcome it. And I think that for me, that's one of my sweet spots, because if they've got the resources, they got the passion, the willingness, and everything to move it forward, I can help them overcome those obstacles and move forward. So I don't shy away from that. It's just, it's not as fun when you see them hurting so bad, but I kind of help them get on a plan of action and a course that's going to make them successful.
But I also find they have to have a place where they see that they need you, because I can't help anybody that doesn't want the help. You know, so I can't oversell that.
That's the meat of it right there. Yeah. There you go. That's right.
Yeah, until they get to the point where they really know that I'm the expert that they need to infuse that into their business, and I come with no ulterior motive other than to help them. Mm-hmm. Then if they buffer that and they really are struggling with it, I'm not the person for them, you know.
Yeah, let me toss one more at you guys, because we're talking about leadership development as well. Right. You know, very similar idea. You ever have this experience? You come into an organization and the leader goes, well, the problem is all these people on my team. If you'll fix my people, we'll go after the vision. But yet, you know that's not where the problem lies. How do you address that issue?
That's right. Well, first of all, I always try to approach it to where I help them understand what the problem is rather than me tell them. So I want to help guide them to where they understand it's bigger than that. And oftentimes, they are part of the problem. They may not be the problem. They may be a part of the problem. So it's really kind of a guiding process.
Yeah, just be the mirror.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they have to self-discover that.
That's
one.
Right.
Yeah. Shifting gears a little bit, I know, Diane, you're very active in women's groups and mm-hmm. kind of organizing a few. I think in Orlando you had a fairly successful executive mm-hmm. women's group, Arete, I believe.
Right.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, back in the 90s, I started a group in Dallas, actually, and it was called the Entrepreneurial Women Presidents Group, and I had a chapter in Dallas that I built it and one in Houston, and I set that up as a 501c3, and it was for women who own businesses 1 to 10 million in annual revenue. I turned the baton back over to them. We moved to Knoxville, and I was having my third boy at 40, so I'm like, okay, need a little break here. But about 6 months ago, no, about a year and a half ago, I started being approached by businessmen in Orlando that would say, Diane, there needs to be something to address the higher level women in this community.
Right.
There's nothing for them, and they're being lost and kind of isolated. So I knew I didn't want to set it up exactly like I did in Dallas. So I set it up for high level, C-level women. I do have business owners in it. I have some PhD candidates, but it's for profit, nonprofit, academia, and political.
Hmm.
But I make them all sign a confidentiality statement. And I find that they need a safe place to have what I call the power of the voice, to pull down their masks and say, hey, I've got some real issues here, and I just need to talk it through. And so I bring them together, and I still go down once a month. And I'll start a chapter here in the Atlanta area when I feel like it's right. But I go down once a month, and we get together. And then we just had our first annual retreat in Siesta Key last month.
Wow.
So that really builds the group to a new level when you're pulsating in and out through some different areas with, you know, personal time and mm-hmm. connect time and fun time. So,
yeah, anyway. It tends to build those great relationships mm-hmm. that sometimes do better than sitting in a meeting room
absolutely.
For a day. You mm-hmm. can do it in 45 minutes practically
mm-hmm.
at lunch. Yeah. So what have you found to be the most challenging part of organizing and running something like that?
Well, they're strong women. But what I find is I love when they can get the aha of they don't have to be in charge. It's a place where they can just come. I just have to make sure that they're committed. And that they will participate and that they will respect one another's voice, even if it's not an area that they agree with, but that they have the freedom and it's a safety net, that they don't have to be all things to all people. And, boy, to see some of the transformation that comes through, because I don't run a same type of format. I do a lot of different things, everything from a collaborative inquiry type process to hot topics to just taking different issues and taking a deeper dive. So it's really fun to see how they kind of get some transformation going on, even if it's not, quote, their issue. So
yeah. They get to have the input on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when do you think you'll have something started up in Atlanta? I mean, I know you're kind of new to the area.
Right,
but,
right. When I feel like I've got enough women that catch this vision and they say, hey, this is something I really need for myself. And that's what happened in Orlando. I brought together a small group, and I thought it'd be about 6 months before we'd launch, and they're like, why wait? Let's get going. So that's how we got going.
Right.
So that was about a year ago in June.
And how's it different working with executive women versus working with executive men? How do you see the differences there?
Well, I find that the women are very connective. You know, they still want a voice, and they want a place at the table. But then they need to feel transparent And sometimes, as you know, we all have to put on a certain, you know, to be able to survive in corporate America and these political environments. So women need to be able to have a place of a safe voice. So that's, and I don't know that men don't need that, but I do see that that's something that draws them to like a group like this, where they can have true peers that they can be with.
We just go into a cave and introspect.
And women, we will reach out when we need, you know, other women. We're I find, compared to what I see in men, is we will go out and get that quicker than men. But that's what I see so far.
Yeah. So the other interesting question that I had to ask, I left it near the end, is you guys are now in business together, and you're obviously in family life together. Mm-hmm. How is that working out? How is that, and what's the challenges, and what are the things that have worked?
Great question. I know
not
that
to put you on the spot or anything.
No.
Now it changes to marital counseling, right? For the Ogles.
No, I'm out.
Now I'm really
I'm
being
out.
Tested.
That's Andy. Andy will take over.
Yeah, exactly. No, I know that when I left the corporate world a couple of years ago, it was a great concern to Diane that we were both going to be working out of the same office, and how is this going to impact? And at first, we weren't in the same room, and after several times, I would get an email from her knowing that she's just, you know, a few feet away.
A room away.
Right. I'm like, why are you sending me an email? So we've since, though, reconciled to we're in the same space. And actually, we found out that has more advantages than disadvantages. First of all, I feel like, you know, I'm in the great place. I get to do business with my wife, so I don't see it as a negative. I see it as a positive because we complement each other, and she's always been my best advocate. She's obviously my best friend in life in that regard, and so we can actually banter things off of each other. We know each other so well, and we're not afraid to be candid with each other to say, no, this is not working, and this is why. So we're not thin-skinned, but we respect each other, and we respect each other's strengths, and we understand how we complement one another. So we found a way to make it work. Now, there are times that we do tend to get on each other's nerves. I can be on a conference call, and she starts printing everything, and it's making all this noise, and I'm like, you know, in the background saying, what are you doing? And so we have our moments, but they're very minor.
Yeah.
So,
are you able to shut down? Are you able to turn off the job and go be with the kids and
I really am. I don't know how much Barry is, but I've been learning to do that since for a long time now. So when I have learned that if I physically leave my office,
right,
I go into my other role. But I've always been a big multitasker, so I turn it off and just leave. And I become a mom, become a wife, and I become a neighbor, and so.
And are you learning this trait?
Right. Right. It has been growing on me, but I do like to be able to weave in and out. So, you know, since it's our own business, I don't have to go somewhere, you know, to a corporate office per se and try to let myself in and so forth. So it's our business, so it's a little different. And so we can kind of ebb and flow a little bit more and have more flexibility, which I enjoy. So I don't feel like I have to stay all these hours before I go home. I can just make it work easier.
Right. Good stuff. So if somebody was trying to get in contact with you and they wanted to at least get an idea of how your business would work or whether it would work for them, what would be the first step and the experience that they would have taking that first step? Kind of walk us through that a little bit.
Well, they can call us or find us on the internet, www.businessmomentumgroup.com. And then we would just set up a conversation to find out, you know, more about them, more about their vision, more about their business, and really trying to uncover and peel back those layers of honesty and where they're wanting to go and what's stopping them. And so it really starts with a non-threatening conversation.
Is there any cost to that conversation?
No.
And I'd just like to say exactly what Diane is saying, but maybe a little differently, is oftentimes we think we know everything, and so we make assumptions about what the problem is, and oftentimes the presenting problem may not be the bigger of the problems. And so we spend a lot of time truly listening and assessing before we take our step and saying, this is what we think we need you to do. So we make a habit out of really practicing that. And this is why we don't come with, well, if you just do this, implement this, this will solve your problems. We take it a step back. and say, okay, what are your problems? And let us truly understand it and come back and see if this is going to work for you.
In that meeting, would they get an understanding of kind of where you think they need to go and kind of what the cost might be? Or would it be sometime later on in a proposal? How would that work?
It's usually a combination of both. I mean, we'd love to go back and be able to try to recap and put into paper, you know, what we think we heard to make sure we're still mm-hmm. uncovering exactly where their heart and vision is. Because that still gives us time to be mobile and make sure we've got the direction and the directives and the commitment. Because the commitment's got to be on both sides. For us to do the work that we know we need to do, we need them to really buy into that and be able to partner with us and align with us so we can do the work we need to do. Mm-hmm. And then, we try to find out what their budget is and try to be sensitive to that, and then put together just a plan that we feel like is going to work for them.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Great. Well, that's good stuff. The last question I have is kind of centered around what we call your pearl of wisdom. So, Diane, maybe you could start us off with a pearl of wisdom.
My biggest pearl of wisdom is integrity and having high values in what you do to make sure that's congruent with the type of business that you are operating at all levels so that you're not disconnected. Because I find the leaders that are really connected with their core of their values and integrity, that's going to long play out that short-term win as they, you know, may be tempted to at different junctures.
So. Good stuff, Barry.
Yeah, and so, John, I assume you drove here today, right?
I did.
So if you're in your car and your car is not acting normal, you would take it somewhere to get a tune-up, right?
Yes, I would.
And if you weren't feeling very well and much more, less than what you think you could take care of yourself, so if you needed a tune-up, you would go to your doctor, right?
I would.
So if you've got your business and your business isn't operating up to the level that it should be, then what I would say is a pearl of wisdom, don't be afraid to reach out and bring someone in that could help you give your business a tune-up. And the best thing about hiring a consultant is they're not full-time employees, so you can release them at any time. So that would just be my pearl of wisdom for today.
All
Thanks
right.
for asking.
Good stuff. Contact information, you guys gave the website. Is there email or phone numbers?
Sure. My email is diogle3@gmail.com. It's D-I-O-G-L-E, the number 3@gmail.com.
And mine is Barry, B-A-R-R-Y dot Ogle, O-G-L-E, @gmail.com. And my phone number is area code 407-494-8390.
Get one of those new numbers. the
407. It's still Florida.
Well, it's a central Florida area.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you guys for coming. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
And sharing that with our audience. To our listeners, we appreciate the time you take each week listening to the show. Hopefully, you are learning as much as we are here in the studio. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.